This morning, we come together in our time of worship, reflecting on something that is really a determining characteristic of our religious community. In so many ways, we all receive from this community, and in so many ways, we give to it. And I'd like to invite Diane Miller and Beth and Wiley Cordone to come up and join me. The seven Unitarian Universalist principles are the values we share as a congregation. They give us our identity and draw others to join us. When we say we affirm these principles, we're saying that we give them our stamp of approval. When we say we will promote them, we're saying that we will try to live by them, help others to accept them, and also live by them. Today, Bethan and Diane will introduce one of the principles and tell us what it means to them.
This fall, we are focusing on the seven UU principles. Today, we celebrate the third UU principle. We affirm and promote acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations.
Another way to say this principle is, we believe that we should accept one another and keep on learning together.
I will now read to you what the third UU principle means to me. Being part of FPC, along with Journey and Meaning and the small group ministry programs, have shown me that acceptance of all beliefs, Jewish beliefs that others share, Catholics' beliefs that some share along with many other religions, atheist beliefs, or my own beliefs, have given me an aha moment, as well as a shared excitement in others' spirituality.
To me, it means that I can evolve my religious beliefs as I figure out who I am and what I believe. I won't be constricted by rules that I must accept to be part of the community. I won't have to worry that I'll have to leave the community if my beliefs change over time. It also means that I can learn from people with many different perspectives, who still respect each other's beliefs, even as their own spiritual understanding changes. This principle teaches me not to be judgmental of the way other people live the UU principles.
In the days ahead, we ask you to be conscious of this UU principle and to think about what it means in your life.
Please join us now in saying the words of the third UU principle as printed in your order of service.
We affirm and promote acceptance of one another and encouragement of spiritual growth in our congregations. Thank you both. Beautifully done. It's so wonderful to have so many people participating. Different music makers and everything. It's just, I'm losing track of who's where, but I know what's next. It's our Director of Religious Education, Michelle Cote, has a wonderful story for us. Please be attentive.
Good morning. Oh, let's try that again. Good morning.
Good morning.
Much better. When I heard about that, when Tom asked me to do the children's message on this principle, the first thing I thought of is when we're talking about a principle that encourages people to accept each other's differences, but then also to work together for growth, I thought of this book, which is called Miss Twigley's Tree. Awesome illustrations if anyone wants to look at it more closely later. But one of the things, this book has several meanings for me. One is the actual meaning of the story. The other is the person who gave it to my daughter, actually, who is the mom of two boys. They're not boys, they're men. They're 44, and they're severely retarded. And I've known them since I was 14, since they were 14, and I was student teaching back in 1984, and I've become very close to their family. In fact, their family is pretty much part of our family now, and vice versa. And Carol is their mom, and she is the most accepting woman that you could ever imagine. And her sons, understandably, sometimes are not accepted. They are very enthusiastic. They're very warm, loving people. But when you first meet them, they're a little off-putting. And every time I think of people reaching their potential and looking to just accept other people, I think of Forrest and Lincoln, because they have reached their potential in ways that none of us could ever have imagined. And every time I read this book, I think of them and their mom and how wonderful it is to live in a world where all can be accepted. And this is called Miss Twigley's Tree. and it was written by Dorothea Warren Fox. Funny Miss Twiggly lived in a tree with a dog named Puss and a color TV. She did what she liked, and she liked what she did. But when company came, Miss Twiggly hid. "It's not that I do not like people," said she, "but one gets a bit shy when one lives in a tree." She named her dog Puss. He didn't mind that. "My very best friend," he said, "is a cat." Old Miss Twiggly was friendly with bears. "They shed on the sofa," she said, "but who cares? They don't find me odd, and I'm grateful for that. They don't mind if I sleep in my hat." Now Puss was clever, a smart dog indeed. He did the shopping for things they would need: groceries, clothing, and tools for repair, bones for himself, and jams for the bears. But whenever he shopped for Miss Twiggly's meals, the town dogs teased and snapped at his heels. So poor Puss shivered as scared as could be, and he hurried back home to his safe and sound tree. Miss Twiggly and Puss were happy up there, high above ground in a house in the air. "Simply disgraceful," said people in town, "to live in a tree and never come down. The wife of the mayor was the maddest of all. To not be at home when I come to call is unforgivable. And besides that, I've been told she sleeps in her hat. My husband must know of a town law," said she, "against things of that kind going on at a tree." She marched to the mayor. "Now what can you do? That house in the tree is spoiling my view. Miss Twiggly's a nuisance. No town should allow a person to hang up her wash on a bough. The smoke from her chimney is causing a smog, and she lives, so they say, with some bears and a dog." The poor mayor sighed. "My dear, I agree, but more pressing problems are bothering me. The weather report says it's going to rain. I fear we're in for a wild hurricane." It did rain for a week and a month and a day. The wind blew a gale and the bridge washed away. The town was cut off, its people afloat. Whatever went by, they used for a boat. The road and the meadow were one stormy sea, and right in the middle stood the house in the tree. Now old Miss Twiggly had battened her hatches, checked her supply of tea and dry matches. "String up some hammocks," she called to the bears. "Puss, you build platforms for spare beds and chairs. We may have some collars and wet ones at that. I'll go change the bows on my best sleeping hat. I'll get right to work on a big pot of stew to be sure there'll be plenty to feed quite a few." She put on a kettle and buttered some bread. "Now let them all come. I'm ready," she said. "They are coming," called Puss, who perched way up high, holding a spyglass close to his eye. "Ahoy!" called the mayor. "Miss Twiggly, yoo-hoo! Is there room in your house for a wet friend or two?" "There's room for you all," Miss Twiggly replied. "Climb up where it's warm, come up and be dry." They hauled up the mayor and the chief of the police and sweet Trudy Wilmot, the groceryman's niece. Pigs came in their trough. A wet mother cat arrived with her kittens aboard a straw hat. Even the dogs of the town came swimming right up, big dogs and small dogs and one frisky pup. And in the very last boat, bedraggled and wet, was the wife of the mayor, looking quite upset. She felt so ashamed of the words she had said, when her hostess declared, "I've fixed you my bed." Miss Twiggly's new friends were cozy and warm, sheltered and fed and out of the storm. Though the wind made the rain go splittery splat, the mayor's wife slept safe and sound in Miss Twiggly's hat. Old Puss, once so shy, forgot all his fear. The town dogs were fun. He was glad they were here. They pretended the house was like Noah's Ark. They played games and sang till long after dark. Now the townsfolk were glad, just as pleased as could be, that funny Miss Twiggly lived in a tree. And when Miss Twiggly found out something wonderful, too, when emergencies come, you don't think about you. You help all you can, and you never ask why. Then, the first thing you know, you forget to be shy. Wonderful story about just accepting everyone for who they are.
We're going to move into a time of meditation and prayer, and Mike is going to start us with that hymn song. It's number 1009 in the supplement, but I bet most of you know the words anyway.
When I breathe in, I breathe in peace. When I breathe out, I breathe out love. When I breathe in, I breathe in peace. When I breathe out, I breathe out love. When I breathe in, I breathe in peace. When I breathe out, I breathe out love.
We try to breathe in peace, but it is difficult to find that peace. When life is in turmoil, when the world has so much violence, terrorism, when things are a struggle for us, when we are anxious or ill, when friends or family are having difficult times, when hate and prejudice still rear their ugly faces, when so much is just left undone, sometimes it feels like there is no oxygen of peace to fill our lungs. Then we must breathe in more deeply and find the peace. Breathing in beyond all the struggle, drawing air to fill our lungs from the place of peace that our hearts know, but our minds sometimes conceal. Then we must exhale love. Love to meet the challenges, the pain, the hate, the lack of tolerance and acceptance, the love that cures, the love that conquers fear, the love that endures all things, the love that never dies. Breathe in peace to calm your soul and prepare you to do the most important thing you can ever do. And you can do that with every breath. Breathe out love. Breathe in peace, and especially breathe out love. A reading that I want to share with you. It's from Bernard Loomer. Loomer was a process theologian. He was a member of our church in Berkeley, California. Interestingly, at the last service, the 9 o'clock service, there was another minister in the congregation who was all excited because she said she hadn't heard anybody quote Loomer for a long time, and she has an article sitting on her desk. So who knows how we happened to connect with that. Loomer writes a really very provocative piece, I think. What is the size of your soul? By size, I mean the capacity of a person's soul, the range and depth of his love, his capacity for relationships. I mean the volume of life you can take into your being and still maintain your integrity and individuality. The intensity and variety of outlook you can entertain in the unity of your being without feeling defensive or insecure. I mean the strength of your spirit to encourage others to become freer in the development of their diversity and uniqueness. I mean the power to sustain more complex and enriching tensions. I mean the magnanimity of concern to provide conditions that enable others to increase in stature. Some people think, probably most people think, that if you and I belong to the same religious tradition, we think alike. We believe alike. Oh, maybe not the small stuff, but certainly on those fundamental questions of life. In our church community, in our religious tradition, we share a lot in common with each other. Indeed, we share the values promoted by the principles we're examining this fall. Today, that third principle. It's easy, though, to leap to the conclusion that another person here thinks and believes just like me. You know how the saying goes. We're a group of like-minded people. You know, everyone here shares my politics, my theology, my educational level, even my socioeconomic position. Well, they don't. And indeed, if they did, we would have failed to live up to what Unitarian Universalism, in fact, claims to be. Now, at one level, we know this. But still, we can think and act as if everyone does think the same way, does believe the same thing, even come from the same socioeconomic place that we do. We may act in ways, often unintentionally, that send the message to others that they're not really accepted here. Oh, maybe they're tolerated. But what sometimes just slips out in conversation conveys the message that maybe this really isn't your place. It can happen in all areas. Not long ago, I heard someone ask another person here, "What college did you go to?" It caught my attention from across the room because I don't think that person who was asked went to college. Do you hear the subtle message about who's accepted? And although our joys and concerns are not supposed to be political, every now and then someone gets up and says, "Yay, our Democrat won the election," without realizing that there are groups of individuals sitting in this congregation who voted for the other candidate, the one who lost the election. And we are not all Democrats. There are Republicans, Independents, Libertarians, and Greens, all in this congregation. Now, sure, that Democratic victory for someone was their joy, but do you see how the expression of that during joys and concerns sends a rather strong message about who's accepted here? This gets difficult. How do we accept someone whose views may be contrary even to the teachings of our principles, or whose actions might put someone at risk? Perhaps someone who has racist tendencies, or opposes equal marriage, or equal rights for women, or someone who has a history of abuse, or being an abuser. There is a caveat to this principle. We have to acknowledge that this third principle, which calls us to acceptance, does not call us to affirm the position or the behavior of others that demean another person or put them at risk. Being a safe congregation for everyone can, in extreme cases, mean restricting a person's role in our community. For example, we do a criminal records check on every person who's involved with our children and youth. And if that produces anything that causes concern, we restrict that person's engagement with our children. Okay, there are some situations where we cannot affirm everything about a person. It's important to know that. But those are the rare situations I'm speaking about, I'm telling you, and I'm not really focusing on them this morning, but I do think it's important that you know that caveat. What I want to turn to now is perhaps the situation where I think we struggle the most. Sometimes we convey the message that we all have the same theological belief. In this congregation, I've heard it said, "Why, folks? Oh, really? If you boil it all down, we all believe in the same God." Or, "Oh, we celebrate some of those religious holidays, but we are all really humanists here. Or at least the vast majority of us. Maybe a few different folks on the edge that we tolerate. You know, maybe the old timers or something. but this is the direction in which we're moving. I have news for you. The people who have been here a long time and those new folks who just came through our doors are all over the place theologically. We don't always act that way, though. A couple of years ago, I had a woman come to my office in tears. She had been coming to the church, to services to this church for quite a while and attending a lot of other church functions. And she said something that really put me back. She said, "I love this church, but I'm just not ready to be a humanist." Now, please understand something. There is nothing wrong with being a humanist at First Parish. Indeed, we have many humanists. And in fact, we're going to have an adult education program on humanism in the near future, so stay tuned for that. It would have been just as troubling to me if she had said, "I love this church, but I'm not ready to be a Christian or a theist or a Jew or a Buddhist or a Taoist or whatever." Here you can be any of those things and others. Indeed, you can be more than one of those things. But you don't have to be any of them. My question to that woman was, what made you think that you have to believe one way, that you have to change the beliefs that you hold that are important to you? And she said something like this. "Well, people are very nice, but they send signals, little things they say or don't say." One person made me feel kind of silly because I asked for prayers when my mother was very sick. I heard someone say, "We don't sing the word God in the hymns." And when people don't know what I believe, they'll say something that makes me feel like I'm dumb to believe what I do believe. Now, I also heard a humanist say, she feels that some Christian members make her feel like she's a second-class member, judging her negatively for not having a belief in a God. In both ways. This very real struggle with diversity in our faith tradition goes even beyond the theological beliefs themselves. When there are great disparities in the way of knowing, in the ways of knowing, the ways of thinking and coming to conclusions about what we believe, people find it really hard then to accept each other. If your way of knowing is the rational scientific method, and my way of knowing is personal, experiential, or even mystical, it's very hard for you to value the truth I discover through my methodology, and it's equally hard for me to understand yours. We live in a time when our society preaches that to be true, and that's a very loaded word, everything has to meet the rigorous test of the scientific method. Even those who hold very traditional beliefs have bought into this. I am always fascinated by those shows on PBS and History Channel and those other places of these scientific explorations that set out to find Noah's Ark or to prove that severe weather conditions actually parted the Red Sea for Moses. As fascinating as these documentaries are from the standpoint of religious truth, they don't really matter much. Most people who really believe those things don't need scientific knowledge to convince them. From a purely factual sense, science certainly has disproven many religious claims. How can anyone believe the earth is 6,000 years old and that evolution never happened? Now look, I'm not suggesting we teach intelligent design in our schools, but what I'm pointing out is that people who believe this way have a different way of knowing that is very hard for us to accept. See, the methodology isn't the same. In truth, we have a challenge that most other faith traditions don't have. We're called to bring people together with different beliefs, different ways of knowing, and truly accept them as they are. And even more difficult than that, there's the second half of that third principle. We are called to encourage them on their journey of spiritual growth, wherever it leads, even when that path completely is opposite to our own. In some ways, this third principle isn't as abstract as the first two. It's not so much an invitation to discuss lofty thoughts, but rather to ask ourselves to look at how we, in our day-to-day simple activities, personally live our lives. How do we do community? How do we do church? It calls us to accept one another in contrast to tolerating one another. Tolerance, at least in my dictionary up here, means to put up with. But acceptance means, in this dictionary, to embrace. And there's a big difference. And that brings me back to that reading by Bernard Loomer that I shared with you earlier. What he's telling us in that reading, I think, is that to truly live that third principle, we need to have what he calls an expansive soul. As we reflect on that third principle, I invite you to really consider what were some of the questions that Loomer poses. What is the size of your soul? What is the range and depth of your love and your capacity for relationships when there are real differences between you and the other person? What is the volume of life you can take into your being and still maintain your integrity and individuality? What is the intensity and variety of outlooks you can entertain without feeling defensive or insecure? Do you have the strength of spirit to encourage others to become freer in the development of their diversity and uniqueness? Do you have the magnanimity of concern to provide others with affirmation and ways to increase the stature of what they believe, even when you feel that what they believe is wrong? This idea of acceptance and encouragement of spiritual growth really is one, if you think about it, about the size of your soul, if you will. What is it that you've made room to let in? What can you hold there in spite of discomfort or conflict with what you believe? The Reverend Rob Hardies, who's the minister at All Souls in Washington, was writing about this third principle, and he pointed out that he once thought of spirituality as a very vertical thing, reaching higher and higher towards the heavens, towards lofty ideas. But he came to realize that spirituality is really about expanding in all directions. Loomer's image, if you will, he's accept that as the image for what spiritual growth is. And I find it a very helpful image to think about spiritual growth and theological understanding as one of expanding in all directions. I commend that metaphor to you. Well, I think I've been a bit hard on us, and that I've focused on the ways we, in fact, have really not always been accepting, as opposed to the many ways in which this is a place of great acceptance. Indeed, we're known for that feature, for being very accepting among the public in general, I think. And I think most of us, if just asked in the abstract, would say, yeah, we're a very accepting denomination. And when you compare us to some other faith traditions, I think that's true. With more than 50% of our clergy now women, we've certainly made great progress on the issue of acceptance of women as leaders of faith. We certainly are among those that are most accepting of GBLT folks. We've done a lot of work on race, even though there's still a way to go. I thought a lot about this during this last week when we heard of these interviews with the Pope, who basically said that Catholics have to back off on their harsh statements about those who don't follow the Church's teachings on certain issues and not make those positions their only message. What it seems to me that he's saying is that his church needs to be more expanding, needs more of the third principle, and good for him. I thought this week about how important his statement was to several Catholic gay friends that I have, who that in spite of all the put-downs have remained loyal to their Catholic church. He didn't really say that much if you think about it. So why is it so important? Because he opened the door of acceptance. He opened the door to be a bit more expansive. You know, we really do mean the words that we often say here and sing here. Come as you are. Come, come, whoever you are. You are welcome as you are. We do mean them. But we sometimes just are not wide enough or deep enough or expansive enough to really fully live them. We get it. We've made great progress in many areas. But there are still places where many of us don't fully live it yet. I think of that all of us need to continue to expand the size of our soul. To accept another, not just to tolerate another, is to actually invite that person into your life. To be expansive enough to even see the world through their eyes, eyes that may be very different from your eyes. To accept their beliefs, their way of knowing truth, and even be able to encourage and support them on that journey, even when that is a journey that you would never travel, is not easy. In some ways, this third principle might be the most difficult of our principles to live, because we all, to a certain degree, would like everyone to see the world the way we do, to believe the way we do, to be like us. There are more doors we need to open wider, so people who are different from us can step inside. We have to make ourselves more expansive to welcome them. This is a spiritual practice. It's what the third principle, I think, calls us to engage. We can only fully live this principle when every door to our church and every door to us, to what Loomer calls our soul, is open wide. When we have grown expansive enough to make room for all the rich differences in our community, so that every single person who chooses to do so can enter in and not just be tolerated, but be fully accepted and even more encouraged and supported on their unique spiritual journey.